the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Those of you listening by World Wide Web, by podcast, I need to tell you we had some technical difficulties on the air, and so you're going to be receiving a little bit of a different introduction to the program that's just about to start. I'm going to tell you what it's all about. There's an article that was in the Los Angeles Times just a matter of a few days ago that really caught my attention, and I'm going to let you hear about it, and then we'll come right back to talk about it. A roommate is a roommate. Coming soon to a campus near you. Kayla Eland and Lyndon Pronto are roommates at Pitcher College in California. They, along with students at a growing number of colleges and universities, are pioneering a new trend, co-ed roommates. The Los Angeles Times reports that Eland and Pronto are not a couple and neither is gay. The paper adds, quote, they are just compatible roommates in a new, somewhat controversial dormitory option known as gender-neutral housing that is gaining support at some colleges in California and across the nation, end quote. The rise of co-ed dorms is the inevitable result of a breakdown in all rationality about sex, gender, and sexuality. In this case, the movement is being pushed by activists who are all too clear about their agenda. The paper reports, quote, Pitzer, which began its program in the fall of 2008, is among about 50 U.S. schools with a housing choice, according to Jeffrey Chang, who co-founded the National Student Gender Blind Campaign in 2006 to encourage gender-mixed rooms. Participating schools include UC Riverside, UC Berkeley, Stanford, Cornell, Dartmouth, Sarah Lawrence, Haverford, Wesleyan, and the University of Michigan. The trend toward gender-blind campus housing comes after previous acceptance of co-ed dorms, generally with separate floors for men and women. Later, students demanded integration on the same halls, but with students of the same sex sharing a room. Now, co-ed rooms and gender-neutral campus housing are the next and presumably final step. Reporter Larry Gordon explained that the emergence of mixed-gender roommates came after college and university administrators worked to meet the requests of gay, bisexual, and transgender students, some of whom preferred a roommate of the opposite gender. At Harvey Mudd College, like Pitzer, one of the Claremont colleges, gender-neutral housing started last fall. It was intended for gay and transgender students, but other students took advantage of the option. Parents cannot veto the decision, Harvey Mudd officials said. Students are encouraged to discuss the issue with family, but parents have no right to prevent their offspring from sharing a room with a person of the opposite gender. Even though several of the students interviewed for the article insisted that their relationships were not sexual, administrators admitted they would be unable to prevent roommates with a sexual relationship from living together. Jeffrey Chang put the case in straightforward terms. Quote, college students are adults. They have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with. Guy Gerbic, dean of residential life at Harvey Mudd College, makes the case in even stronger and more alarming terms. After explaining that he could not make an issue of roommates having sex, he said, quote, if we're going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. All this adds up to a perfect jumble of moral confusion. Consider all that is mixed up here. First, we have schools collapsing under the logic of gender rebellion. Instead of respecting boundaries, they remove them as a gesture of supposed tolerance and sensitivity. Second, we have students insisting that there is nothing remotely odd or sexualized about two heterosexual students of opposite genders living in the same small space. That is both unbelievable and deeply sad. Third, we have activists and administrators lecturing parents that they have no right to resist all this. When Jeffrey Chang insists that college students are adults who have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with, he assumes, probably rightly, that many parents will just accept that argument at face value. This is nuts. If these students are adults with such rights, let them pay the steep bills at Harvey Mudd and Pitzer Colleges. What self-respecting parent would cave to this logic or to the lectures from college administrators that they have no right to intervene? Colleges and college students get away with this insanity because America has too many parents with too little sense or backbone. To cap it all off, Dean Gerbic adds the revelatory comment, if we're going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. True enough, a post-gender world represents the eclipse of personal morality and the regulation of private behavior. In this simple sentence, Dean Gerbic reveals a total moral revolution, and he seems proud to be leading and facilitating that revolution. The Christian worldview requires an affirmation of gender as a part of God's intention in creation and as a central aspect of the goodness of God's design. The gender-blind movement represents a rebellion against this central premise, and gender-neutral housing is the perfect picture of this revolt against both creation and common sense. Lyndon Pronto, the young man who shares a dorm room with Kayla Eland, insists that the whole thing is no big deal. "As far as I'm concerned, a roommate is a roommate," he said. Those words represent nothing less than a moral revolution. Is that revolution coming soon to a campus near you? And we'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. This is an interesting story. In one sense, it's nothing more than kind of the final exclamation point at the end of the gender confusion of our age. But what we're talking about here is one of those graphic illustrations of a society that's losing its sanity. Let me just tell you about how the story is set up in the Los Angeles Times. Kayla Eland and Lyndon Pronto are roommates at Pitzer College. They, along with students at a growing number of colleges and universities, are pioneering a new trend, which is not only co-ed roommates, but what's called gender-blind housing or gender-neutral housing. The Los Angeles Times says that of this couple, they're not a couple, they're neither gay. They're just compatible roommates in a new, sometimes controversial dormitory option. As the paper explains, the rise of co-ed dorms is an inevitable result of a breakdown in terms of colleges trying now to serve those, especially of transgender and gay identification, who are claiming that they need this kind of housing in order to have their needs met. The paper reports Pitzer, which began its program in the fall of 2008, is among about 50 U.S. schools with the housing choice, according to Jeffrey Chang, who co-founded the National Student Genderblind Campaign in 2006 to encourage gender-mixed rooms. Participating schools include University of California, Riverside, Berkeley, Stanford, Cornell, Dartmouth, Sarah Lawrence, Haverford, Wesleyan, and the University of Virginia. Now, many of you looking at this, excuse me, it's the University of Michigan. Apologies there to the University of Virginia. The trend toward gender-blind campus housing comes after a previous acceptance of co-ed dorms. And after co-ed dorms of separate floors, there came integration on the same halls, but now you have integration in the same rooms. Now, one of the interesting things going on here is how that this is basically being packaged. At Harvey Mudd College, which is like Pitzer, one of the Claremont colleges there in California, gender-neutral housing started last fall. According to the resident life dean there, it was intended for gay and transgender students, but other students took advantage of the option. Now, this is what's really interesting. Parents cannot veto the decision. Students are instead encouraged, put the quotation marks around encouraged, to discuss the issue with family, but parents have no right to prevent their offspring from sharing a dorm room with someone of the opposite gender. Now, I want you to hear a couple of statements. First of all, this one is from Jeffrey Chang. He is the young man that established this movement toward gender-blind housing. He says this. Now, parents, just buckle your seatbelts to hear this statement. I want to prepare you for it. Here it comes. Quote, college students are adults. They have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with. End quote. Okay, well, let's deal with that one. But here comes the second one. And this is Guy Gerbic, who is dean of residential life at Harvey Mudd College. He makes the case in even stronger, more alarming terms after explaining that he could not make an issue of roommates who, for instance, did have a sexual relationship. He said, now listen to this quote, because this is one of the most revealing sentences I think you're going to hear about the sexual revolution. Quote, if we are going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. You know, that's exactly right. If we are going into a post-gender world, the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. And that's what we're looking at here. We're looking at colleges and universities saying it's not even practical to try to regulate any kind of personal or private behavior. So all we're going to try to do is simply go at what amounts to letting folks just room with whomever they want to room with and not letting parents even have a say in what's going on. So it's very, very interesting. Phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What I want you to think about is this. These two statements, even more than the background story here about the co-ed residence housing, I think what's even more interesting are these two statements. The statement by Jeffrey Chang, college students are adults. They have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with. You know, just to put this as bluntly as I can, if parents are paying the bills, they do have a veto. Let's clearly understand that. And we're living in a time in which these college students are going through this extended adolescence. If you are financially independent, then guess what? You might be able to make a plausible case that you are an adult. If not, then forget it. But the statement that is made by Guy Gerbic is, I think, one of the most interesting I've seen in a very long time. If we are going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. That's really, really interesting. So let's just rehearse for a minute what's been going on here, because what we had in terms of just the last, say, 50 years in the American College and University campus, we had what was known as in loco parentis, if you go back to the 1960s and 70s, and that meant that the college administration was legally understood to act on behalf of parents. They were the in loco parents, as if they were parents. And what we have now, of course, is these schools are now saying, we're not going to regulate anything at all. And now no private behavior. So we've seen a breakdown in all of this over the last 50 years, but the last 10 years has been the period of rapid acceleration. Simply no doubt about it. Extremely rapid acceleration. And I'll tell you the truth, I didn't see this coming with a statement that would be made this baldly by a dean of residential life at a major college. Harvey Mudd College is a very respected academic institution there in California. The Claremont Colleges are well-respected academic institutions, and yet now you have the dean of residential life saying, if we're going into a post-gender world, now that's quite a conditional, isn't it? If we're going into a post-gender world, it's pretty clear that we are indeed at this college. And the 50 that are now reported to be involved in gender-blind housing, we are going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. Now, that's where I want to take the issue and jump right off the college campus into the entire society in which we live, because that is a profoundly true observation. You know, if then statements are very revealing, if this is true, then this follows. If it is true that we are going into a post-gender world, then I'm going to argue that this man's second proposition makes perfect sense. The regulation of private behavior is just not practical. And it's not just going to be in co-ed dorms. It's not just going to be in gender-blind housing. It's not just going to be on college and university campuses. It's going to be writ large across the culture. Because, you know, right now, so many of our rules, going all the way to social etiquette and furthermore, to even rules about sexual harassment, and rules about marriage and all the rest, they require an understanding of gender. And not just as some kind of social convention, not just as some kind of philosophical abstraction, but as something culturally, legally, socially, philosophically, spiritually, theologically meaningful. And once we back off and say it's not meaningful at all, then we are really in big trouble. The phone number is 877-893-8255. You know, my guess is that this issue really needs to be attacked from many different angles. First of all, the fact that you have this man, Jeffrey Chang, claiming that college students have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with, I don't know. I just feel like there's some people who aren't going to quite buy that argument. The statement that college students are adults and parents should have no veto power over their housing choices, well, that's another one that I think bears some good conversation. And then most ultimately, this statement by Guy Gerbic of Harvey Mudd College, if we are going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. I'll tell you, I think that one takes the cake. That is the statement that I think is of greatest significance here. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm glad to be back with you live on the air from Florida, coast to coast, and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program, broadcasting to you live from Sandestin, Florida. Let me tell you, we're always glad to hear from you by phones, also by Facebook, by email, by Twitter. At Facebook, it's Albert Mueller Program, Twitter /Albert Mueller and Mueller Radio. Glad to hear from you by good old email at mail@albertmueller.com, and always glad to receive calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Daryl wrote in on Facebook to say that you may deny these gender distinctions, but they do not disappear. And instead, we should celebrate them and understand them as a part of the goodness of what God has given us. That's absolutely right. Scott wrote in to say, once you start tampering with marriage And with the entire question of gender, there's nothing to which this will not be eventually extended. And that's exactly right. There is nothing to which this logic will not be eventually extended. It won't last on the college campus alone for long. It will bounce right off the college and university campus, right into everything else. It's inevitable. That statement is so clear, coming from Guy Gerbic, when he says right out front, if you're going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. Well, if that's true on the college campus, and I'm sure it is, it's going to be true everywhere else as well. Let's go to the phones. We've got Tim, who's calling in from Orlando, Florida. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, I would say that in regards to this thing of not letting parents have any say-so and so forth, well, you know, from the time that they're infants, parents have some degree of direction that they have for their children. But when they're in college, they're footing the bill for the most part, I'm sure in most cases. And it's in some sense, they're still like under their roof to a certain extent. And therefore, the parents' wishes and rules should be considered greatly. I'm sure that it would get the attention of the administrators greatly if some of these parents were to pull their kids out of those schools to do this and exert their opinion that way. But I doubt they would want that.
You know, you're exactly right. And my guess is that you're thinking like almost any sane parent would think. But that leads me to wonder, Tim, why are all these parents who would presumably be opposed to this, why would they go along, pay the bills and all the rest? You know, this amazing statement about these kids, these college students, and let's just call them young men and young women being adults with every right to choose who they're going to live with, you know, just by preference. You know, that just ignores the fact that what we have in the college and university time is this collection of people who by and large are over 18. I mean, they're legally declared not to be minors any longer, but to be adults in most ways. But they're not paying their own bills. They're not economically self-sufficient. And it's really a time of extended adolescence as you go through the period of years from 18 generally to about 22 for the undergraduate experience in America. And for parents, just to be written off as irrelevant to this, you know, I just don't think there are many parents that are going to go along with that, not at all. Thanks for your call, Tim. Let's go to Jerry calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Jerry. What are you thinking?
Sure. I'm not necessarily saying that gender neutral or rooms where the gender doesn't matter, that in a dorm, that's a good thing. It might not be a good thing. But the moving away from gender roles in society, I think that's been going on for really the last couple hundred years, and I don't think it's a necessary bad thing. At one time, women couldn't wear pants, women couldn't run for office, or get certain jobs. So although there are distinctive differences in the gender, to allow greater roles for people to pursue what they want to do, I think that's a good thing.
Well, I think you just opened, you know, an entire arena of conversation here, Jerry. Let me just ask you to back off of the issue of, say, roles and professions. The presenting issue here is the claim that on the college campus, even when it comes to housing and even when it comes to a single dorm room, there should be a gender-blind policy. Does that make sense to you in itself?
Well, you would have to look at any problems from a gender-blind policy, but I know you kind of somewhat disagree. They are adults, and even if they're paid for by their parents, I don't know. Should the school determine if the students can go to R-rated movies based on the permission of their adults? I mean, you open up a can of worms if you're going to have that much control by the school.
Yeah, Jerry, that's very interesting. I appreciate your call. We always really appreciate contrary opinions. But you know, let me tell you, as a college president, the law is such that you can't just surrender all concern for private behavior. And on most of these colleges and universities, the laws and the regulations are actually more extensive than they were even years ago. Because when you enter this so-called gender-blind world, you end up with all kinds of things. You look at the sex codes, as they're called, on most of these progressive and liberal campuses, and you'll discover, oh, these colleges figure they got a lot of responsibility, but it's just a responsibility that's kind of a universe turned on its head from where we were just a few decades ago. Jerry, thanks for calling from Milwaukee. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Obviously, we've touched a nerve here, and it's one of those revelatory, illustrative moments. One of those stories that gets our attention and says, something's going on here. We better figure out what it is. We'll be right back to do just that on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about this idea of gender-blind housing, a story out of Pitzer College, one of the Claremont colleges in California. The issue of this, of the gender-blind housing is not so revolutionary. Maybe, I mean, we've actually had news stories about this before. It's the explanation that I think really is the worldview implication here. When you have someone like Jeffrey Chang, young man who started this movement toward gender-blind housing, gender-neutral housing on campuses, when he says college students are adults, they have every single right to choose the person they feel most comfortable living with. Well, surprisingly enough to me, we've had at least one caller call in to defend that. And then when Guy Gerbic, the dean of residential life at Harvey Mudd College, says if we're going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. Well, you know, what's really interesting, I wish right now I could just pull up what I know are likely to be the regulations and the sex codes and the politically correct kind of a regulatory context of Pitzer College and Harvey Mudd College, because what they're saying is when it comes to sexual behavior, if it's consensual, then we're just completely we're just accepting of whatever is consensual. But we're going to have to come up with all kinds of rules and things, because once you have the breakdown of sexual morality in terms of, well, thou shalt not commit adultery and fornication and all the rest, well, then you're stuck in regulating who can do what with when, with whom when, and under what circumstances. It's a real mess. And then the statement coming from Guy Gerbic, you know, just very baldly saying, if we're going into a post-gender world, then the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. I'll tell you, I think he's absolutely right. And I think that points out the problem with a gender-blind or post-gender world. You're ignoring the obvious here. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Ashby, Massachusetts, where Steve's listening on WVNE. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, hi. Just listening to that comment of the dean talking about the post-gender world, I immediately got a picture of kind of the proverbial ostrich with his head stuck in the sand there. And really, I think because he can't see God, he says God's not there. And he's really saying it's a post-God world, because I would imagine that he would only assent to the fact that gender is important if we're talking about religion.
Yes, Steve, that's a very interesting point, and it gets to where I end my article you'll find at albertmueller.com on this, and that has to do with the fact that the rebellion against gender is not really a rebellion against gender. It never is. It's a rebellion, first of all, against the idea that gender is a fixed category, that it's a reality to which we are accountable. And what you have in the revolt of the modern age, and certainly in this postmodern confusion, is a revolt against the idea that gender is a category to which we are accountable. That idea of accountability just doesn't fit the way that so many of these postmoderns and moderns think. The rebellion against gender is the voice of someone that wants to be liberated from gender as an issue of accountability. But behind that accountability to gender, and this is, Steve, right where you put your finger on the issue, is the reality of whether or not there is a creator who gave us gender as a part of the goodness of his creation. If gender is nothing more than a social construct, if gender is nothing more than an evolutionary product, if gender is nothing more than just some kind of tacit agreement we make with each other to consider certain things of importance just in our cultural negotiation, then we can dispense with it. But none of us, I believe, when we close our eyes and in the stillness of our hearts contemplate this, believes that that's all there is to gender. Now, I guess if you are a naturalistic materialist, if you're a secular evolutionist, then you might actually have to come to that conclusion. But my guess is you'd have a hard time coming to that conclusion when it comes to your own kids, honestly. But I think few and far between are those who actually think this issue through and can see it anything other than a rejection of gender as a meaningful category. That's where it is. You know, gender's now just a matter of choice, self-expression. It's a lifestyle. It's a fashion statement. That's all it is for some people. Steve, thank you so much for your call. And let's just think about what's lost there. What we lose there is not just the social conventions and the social expectations. What we lose there is not just the sense of order in society and the regulation of what would be a sane society through a moral code. What we lose there is any sense of the creator's glory in his own creation, having made us male and female. And that is an incalculable loss. This is this picture from Pitzer College, this gender-blind housing, Harvey Mudd College, and the other campuses where this goes on. It's a perfect jumble of moral confusion. We have schools collapsing under the logic of gender rebellion. Instead of respecting boundaries, they remove them as a gesture of supposed tolerance and sensitivity. Second, we have students insisting that there's nothing remotely odd or sexualized about two heterosexual students of opposite genders living in the same small space. I don't buy that at all. That's both unbelievable and deeply sad that they would even make the argument. Third, we have activists and administrators lecturing parents that they have no right to resist all this. That's just bizarre to me. To cap it all off, we have the statement that going into a post-gender world, we're just going to have to deal with the fact that the regulation of private behavior is just not practical. Now, that represents a total moral revolution, a total moral revolution. And instead of trying to preserve the culture, to preserve sanity in the midst of this, you've got college administrators who are falling all over themselves to facilitate the revolution. It used to be that the students were the revolutionaries. Now, in many cases, those students have grown up. They've gotten tenure. They've gotten positions in colleges and universities. They're members of the thought class and the intellectual elite. They're now in a position not only to review policy, but to make policy. And this is what it looks like. Very interesting. Lyndon Pronto, who's the young man who shares a dorm room with a girl, Kayla Eland, insists that the whole thing is no big deal. He says, quote, as far as I'm concerned, a roommate is a roommate. And that's why I titled my article, A Roommate is a Roommate with a Question Mark, because I just don't believe that. I don't believe anyone who's ever shared a room with anyone believes that it's not morally significant. The intimacy of sharing that space, of sleeping in the same room, all of this amounts to what is no doubt a new definition of what is sex and sexualized. Those words represent nothing less than a moral revolution. And I fear it's a moral revolution coming soon to a campus near you. And if not to the campus, then to the society around you. Now, I'm thankful. After I've written my article, I've heard from a good many evangelical Christian and other college presidents have written, say, not on my campus. We're not joining that revolution. And my guess is that it will be some time before this becomes a mass movement across America. But then again, we could have said the same thing about many other developments that appeared to be so radical, we couldn't imagine they would take hold on a wholesale kind of level. But then we turn around, and within a matter of 24, 36, just a few months, there it is, the new normal. That's what it's like in a postmodern society where everything's up for grabs and all the absolutes are up for renegotiation. You turn around and there's a new normal. The continual reset of normal is indeed one of the symptoms of an age that is basically embracing everything it can try on to try to figure out what will make things work. In reality, Christians may be some of the very few on the planet who, by the grace of God, know that things work when we get closest to the Creator's glory, which is also where we're going to find our good. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. This statement, a roommate is a roommate, that's one of those statements that just comes back to tell us there's a lot changing around us. We're living in a time of fluid worldviews and a great deal of social change, and that social change includes a battle of worldviews, a complete moral, let's just say whirlwind and whirlpool in which all kinds of things are being thrown up in the air and in the water and in the mix, and we're going to be very, very interested to see what kind of new social contract emerges on the other side of this. Christians have to look at something like this and realize there are deeper issues than the presenting issues. The presenting issue is gender-blind or gender-neutral housing. We know there's a deeper issue that's at stake here. Going back to Genesis 3, there's a basic rebellion against God's sovereignty over creation. Paul wrote in on Facebook to say we're living in a postmodern, post-Christian, and post-gender age. He says, it sounds like a lot of post to me. We're living in a post-world. And, let me give you hope, Paul. We may be living in a world just as you describe here, with a lot of things post that is behind us. But you can count on the fact that out before us is indeed an eschatology that assures us that God is in control. And in his kingdom, things will be made right. What we're seeing is a moral rebellion writ large before our eyes, but it will not be the last of the story. Amanda writes in on Facebook responding to say more or less the same thing. Even though we're living in all these post-whatever cultures, Jesus still reigns, and so he does. And the most important thing is that the church maintain our witness to the gospel in the midst of this, because even especially in a time of such confusion, the one sure thing we know to talk about is what's revealed in God's word, and most centrally, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the only gospel that saves. John wrote in to write about the fact that this kind of, I'm just going to paraphrase what he had to say here, this kind of new arrangement, this supposedly non-sexualized, gender-blind mixing of the genders housing, he said that's going to lead to all kinds of pathologies. Well, you know, my guess is it is both the cause and the result of this, John. I think you're profoundly right. I think we can count on all kinds of bad effects out of this. And I'll tell you, just as a dad and just as someone who was a college student one day, the kind of intimacy that you have in a dorm, and I mean, they're just living in close proximity and all the rest, sharing bathroom and all the rest, sharing personal space. I can just tell you, young men and young women should not be in that situation unless they are Mr. and Mrs. married to each other. I just can't think of any good, positive thing that can come out of that. There might be a time of war or disaster when young men and young women will be put together like this, but on elite college and university campuses, to have these students doing it as a matter of choice, that tells us a great deal about who they are, tells us a great deal about who these administrators are, tells us a great deal about who as a society we are becoming. And I want to tell Christians, we've got a lot to think about, a lot to do. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.